This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Now from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Hey, welcome to the show. We've got some stuff going on, don't we? My goodness, what a day yesterday of sports. Everything's going on. We have a lot of guests coming up, and I'm going to give you the list in just a moment. But how are we doing today, Mizzou fans? How are we doing, Illinois fans? How are we doing, Blues fans? And college football alive and well. What a crazy day yesterday, no doubt about it. We're going to hear an interview that Brady Cook did with ESPN in just a moment. After an unbelievable day yesterday for Cook and the Missouri Tigers and their fans, homecoming is a special day in Columbia, without question. They have claim to the first ever homecoming. They're the ones who originated it, as the story goes. And they celebrate it there in Columbia. Always has been a great tailgating scene in Columbia at Faurot Field. And sometimes tailgaters will kind of linger. Some people don't go into the game. My daughter told me she had some friends who went to Columbia to go hang out in the parking lot. Not everybody can get a ticket to go see the Auburn game. Well, what if you're tailgating and a car goes by, driven by an athletic trainer, and Brady Cook's riding in it in the middle of the game? You're like, Is that the quarterback just now going through town, going through the tailgate? Where is he going? He's going to the hospital because Brady Cook injured his ankle in the first series of the ball game yesterday against Auburn, and the Tigers were in trouble. They put their backup, Drew Pine, in there, and they found themselves down in this game 3-0. It was 3-3, but they really stalled, and Cook, whose ankle was injured to the point where he had to get an MRI, was placed in a vehicle and taken to University Hospital. And if anyone's ever had an MRI, they put you in this tube and you sit there and you have no contact with the outside world. And so he had no contact with what was going on at Faurot Field. And you basically, because you are not allowed electronics, you have to sit there and wait for a while for the results, and you have nothing. You have you and walls and a ceiling. And that's basically what he had, except maybe a little update every once in a while from whoever accompanied him to the hospital telling him what the score was. I'm sure he didn't like the score when he heard, when he came back to Faurot Field after the MRI, that they were down 17-3. But Brady Cook, the St. Louisan, the Chaminade product, the often criticized quarterback, I should add, not only in the beginning of last year, and then he turned everybody around then, he has done it again. Because he was criticized heavily after the Texas A&M game, and he did not have a good game, but neither did Missouri. They could not block to save their lives. They couldn't do anything right in that game, nothing. They couldn't run the ball. They couldn't block. They couldn't tackle. They couldn't do anything. And they certainly couldn't protect Brady. So when he went 13-for-31, I thought he got unfair criticism, but I also saw a quarterback that didn't look 100%. He had acknowledged this last week that a lower body injury had hampered him a little bit. Well, here he goes with now an ankle injury. But he comes back to Faurot Field. Missouri is down 17-3. But he engineers drives. He immediately hits Theo Weiss for a 72-yard pass to get Missouri in position to score. And they do just that. They cross the goal line with a touchdown to make it a more interesting game. And the crowd is back into it. He hit Weiss for that big, big gainer, and then they were able to punch it in and get themselves an opportunity on a Marcus Carroll touchdown. Then late in the game, a dramatic drive, again, engineered by Brady Cook on his own 5. And he's not just throwing passes, and they're great passes, but he's scrambling on that ankle. I don't know what they did. They didn't talk about how they treated the ankle, but they did something that took the pain away momentarily. I don't know how he's going to feel today. By the way, we tried to get him on the show today, and we were told by Mizzou that he was getting treatment at this time. So we hope for the best and hope that, everything is okay with Brady. But he looked yesterday like an absolute warrior. And he's running, he's scrambling, he's throwing, he's making plays. And it's a 95-yard, 17-play drive that ends in a touchdown into the hands of Jamal Roberts, a run with 46 seconds to go. Missouri takes the lead, and they win the game 21-17 over Auburn, a desperate team. They hand Auburn their fifth loss of the year. They're done. They have been done for a while, and Missouri's very much alive. They're 6-1 after a win and on the field with ESPN. This was on a national broadcast, by the way, on ESPN in front of the world. Here is Brady Cook.
Come back out, your team down two scores. How did you pull off this win?
I don't know. I really don't. You know, that second quarter, you know, I sat in silence and we were figuring out what we had to figure out. And I came back and I just knew we weren't going to lose this game. Not on homecoming, not today, not like this. We weren't going to lose.
You're emotional. What brings you to tears?
Oh, I am emotional. I am. You know, Mizzou means so much to me. You know, the first six games, you know, they haven't gone the way I wish they would have in a lot of ways. And to come out here the first drive and get hurt and to be down, to think I'm not going to come back in the game and then find a way. And we just manifest it. We get it done. We fight, and we win. It's just, I'm emotional right now.
How were you able to fight and get back into this game?
You know, shout out to our trainers. But I've played through stuff before. I've been through adversity before, physically, emotionally, mentally. This isn't anything new. It's just another step.
What did you learn about your team today?
I learned that we're going to fight. I learned that my energy, my leadership means something to them. I learned that for sure when I came out in the third quarter. And I learned that they're always going to fight.
Congratulations, Brady.
Do not count out Brady Cook just yet, then, now, or in the future. This guy is big time. That is a big time effort by Brady Cook, the Missouri quarterback. And Missouri will have its hands full. We all know that. We got it. Against Alabama on Saturday at 2:30. But Alabama's not Alabama from last year. They're a little shaky. Their defense raises a lot of questions. Get this ball in the hand of Luther Burden as often as possible, please. And Missouri has a shot against Alabama. But Missouri with a great win, a comeback win, a had-to-have-it win, and Brady Cook gets the job done. Illinois, a wonderful win at home against Michigan. We're going to take a break. We're going to be joined by the radio voice of the Fighting Illini, Brian Barnhart, and break that one down for you. Just how good is Illinois? They're good. 21-7, they beat Michigan. We'll talk to Brian next on KMOX.
Postman swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Milliken's win! Milliken's win!
Once again, from the Stiefel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Oh, the college football world is swirling. What an incredible Saturday it was. And let's go to Champaign. Champaign, Illinois was hopping yesterday. Illinois with a win over Michigan 21-7. Missouri won over Auburn. All kinds of great stuff happening yesterday. But let's go to Illinois right now in the voice of the Illini, Brian Barnhart on KMOX. Hello, Brian.
Hey, Tom. Good morning to you.
Good morning. What a time this is to be a member of the Fighting Illini broadcast team and of that program. Brett Bielema's got them going 21-7 over Michigan. And you could say that Michigan is down and you'd be correct. You could also say that Illinois is up and you would be absolutely correct. Those were two Big Ten heavyweights going at it, and the Illini came out victorious.
Well, they did, and you're right, Tom, and there was so much going on, of course, with the 100th anniversary of the, almost to the day, plus one day of the Red Grange game back in 1924. They had a wonderful rededication ceremony on Friday. They had a gala with all the great Illini football players on Friday night, and then, of course, the game. The weather was terrific, and then the outcome was terrific, and just all that it was eerie because it was the 77th ever sellout. Of course, that was Grange's number, 77th ever sellout at Memorial Stadium. It was the margin of victory was 14, 7 plus 7. I mean, there was like sevens everywhere. It was like Red Grange was running the show yesterday. And it was, you know, but this current Illinois team is a really good team, Tom. And I know, much like your Indiana Hoosiers, it's a pretty cool time right now.
It sure is. I just got word that College Game Day is going to be in Bloomington for the Indiana game on Saturday. Unbelievable. I'm just like, and I'm going to the game. So it's just, you know, it's, I feel like I'm living, and I'm sure you feel this way too, like I'm in a dream, and no one has tapped me on the shoulder yet to wake me up. I mean, this is exactly what you want. If you're a fan of a team that has been knocked around for years, and Illinois, while it has had good years, it's been frustrating, hasn't it, Brian?
It has, and you know this. I mean, it's been, you know, very high highs. We know a Sugar Bowl, a Rose Bowl, a couple of bowl games, and then, you know, 2-10 seasons. And, you know, just too much up and down. And that's the one thing Brett Bielema promised when he came. He said, look, I want to be consistent. We're going to be tough, dependable. We're not going to beat ourselves. And he's kind of built that team in his image where it's, you know, Illinois doesn't beat themselves very often. And if there is adversity, they bounce back from it. You know, they had a really scary game last week against Purdue in the second half, one of the wilder games I've ever seen, where Purdue scored 40 points in the second half. They still managed to find a way to win. And then they were never really threatened by Michigan yesterday. I mean, Michigan had the more time of possession. Michigan had a couple of long drives, but the defense got the turnovers. You know, the kicking game, the punting was terrific with Hugh Robertson. It was very complimentary football that coaches talk about all the time, and that was no fluke yesterday. They played really, really well.
Tell me about Altmyer, and when you first laid eyes on him, when Illinois was able to get him, did you envision that this would be the offense that he would be signal calling?
Well, you know, you hoped it would, but, you know, he had not really played that much. You know, as you know, at Ole Miss, he was a backup. He had maybe started a game or two, but not really a regular part of their rotation. And then he struggled early here. He had the one game against Penn State early in the year where he threw four interceptions. But from that point on, he just kind of steadily got more comfortable with Barry Lunney's offense, the offensive coordinator. He settled in. He was playing really well at the end of the year, and then he got hurt, and then John Paddock came out of nowhere and threw for a stadium record 500 and some yards against, I think it was Indiana, in an overtime game last year, and then finished the season, and Luke never got back in. And then his second year under Barry Lunney, he just looks confident. You can feel that. The guys tell me in the huddle how confident how much confidence he exudes when he's out there. What has he got, 15 touchdowns and one interception? I can count on one hand, Tom, the bad decisions he's made this year, or maybe poor decisions or bad throws. There just haven't been any. Even when he's under pressure, he does the smart thing, or if he runs it, he knows when to get down. He's just really playing extremely well, and he's a big part of the reason why Illinois is 6-1 already.
They sure look like Brett Bielema's best teams. You know, they really do. At Wisconsin, one of those teams that could be so tough to move on the line. And I think that was a concern too, Brian, wasn't it? That you'd be able to replace, especially on the defensive line, what you lost last year?
Well, yeah, Johnny Newton, of course, went to the Washington Commanders. Keith Randolph had gone to the Bears. They were concerned. And Dennis Briggs comes in from Florida State. He's an older guy. I think he's 24, 25 years old and been around a while. And T.Ry Edwards is a guy that came in from Northwestern 3 years ago that not a lot of people talked about. And on two plays yesterday, he had a sack to end a Michigan drive, forced him a field goal, and then he blocked a kick in back-to-back plays. And so those guys are playing really well. I don't know if they fully replaced a guy like Johnny Newton, but they certainly have, as defensively, are tough. They've got several interceptions this year. They had a couple of fumble recoveries yesterday. And it's just playing well, and you know it takes all this, Tom, in the three facets of the game. You know, your special teams are solid. They've got really good kickers. You know, the defense is solid. It needed to be better against the run. It was against Michigan, a very good running team. And then the offense, two deep threats in Pat Bryan and Zachary Franklin. Hank Beatty's coming on as he's the Big Ten's leading punt returner. And so you're right. I think it resembles a lot of his teams that he had success with, especially at Wisconsin. And I think they can even be better. Now, they're going to get a test this week at I don't know if they're already number one or not, but Oregon. That's the next game, and we'll see if they can build on what they did yesterday and go out there and try to steal one.
Yeah, I think it'll be announced at 1 o'clock that Oregon will be number one. What do you think you have to do to make that a competitive game, just to hold on to the football, I would imagine? Time of possession is a big deal.
Right, time of possession, keep it out of Gabriel's hands, You know, they've got an excellent running back. I mean, they're just a really good team to beat Ohio State. Now, they did struggle early. They had a couple of games where they didn't exactly blow somebody out. But then Boise State's got the potential, you know, Heisman Trophy winner, too. So, you know, we'll see. That. I think the big thing is they just got to, you know, not turn the ball over, give themselves a chance. Because that was going to be the key yesterday. Three things was, one was to be able to stop the run. B, I think they felt like going into the Michigan game, and this will probably be the same at Oregon, if they can run it for 150 yards, they're going to have a shot. And this was, I think, their best rushing game of the year. And then just not turn the ball over and give themselves a chance. And turnovers and a fake punt didn't hurt either yesterday in the win. They just have to kind of replicate basically what they did yesterday.
It just has to feel so satisfying to be an Illinois fan this morning that you toppled Michigan. And I know that for me as an Indiana fan, they're coming November 9th to Bloomington, and God willing, Indiana's in a position to get to the college football playoff at that point. But regardless, a chance to be, it's just the visual of Michigan that when they do it over and over and over again, it just feels so good to be able to do that. And for you to put the headset on, see the orange in the crowd, see that place packed to the gills, it's been a long time coming.
It really has. And for, you know, Illinois fans, of course, remember, if you're old enough, to go back to 83 when they won the Big Ten championship. We were at a table the other night with David Williams, who's a Hall of Fame receiver, and several guys on that team, of course, that led them to a Big Ten title. But think about this, Tom. In the 50s, Illinois beat Michigan seven times. Since 1959, they had beaten them six times total, and four of those were in Ann Arbor. So they only had two wins since the 1950s against Michigan in Champaign. So that tells you how special it is. And people will say, well, why did they? Because they stormed the field yesterday. People from the outside probably go, why would you were ranked higher than Michigan? Why would you storm the field? Well, you don't know because you're not an Illinois fan, because if you beat Michigan around here, that's a big deal. And I'm sure it'd be the same for Indiana. Indiana fans would feel the same way. But,
you bet.
But we've been tormented by Michigan for so long and come close on several occasions. And it just means more when you beat someone like Michigan.
Absolutely. It's not like there were a bunch of 50-year-olds running around on the field. Those are students, you know. I mean, let those students do what they want. Did you get your hand out? Did anyone get a hand on one of those leather helmets for you? That's a big collector's item, I'll bet.
I know. That'd be nice to have. We were discussing that. I don't know what they're charging for those. But, yeah, that was an unbelievable. All those helmets were hand-painted, sprayed, whatever. Each helmet done in a factory in Nebraska. Those uniforms were spectacular, as you know, and you've done some play-by-play. My biggest concern was, okay, can I read the numbers, you know, from up high? And I could. They were nice and white on those jerseys, but yeah, they look spectacular.
That is awesome. Before we go, we're going to hear from SLU coach Josh Schertz here in just a moment, but give me a rundown, if you would, in our final moments here of Brad Underwood's team, Illini basketball. I was a little surprised they weren't in the top 25, but I think they will be very quickly.
Oh, I think they will, and I think basically it's because you lost so much of your scoring from last year with, you know, Shannon and Damask and all those guys. This team, they've got an outstanding roster, really from literally all over the world. But you know, 10 of the 12 guys are new, and they've got a young man from Lithuania who scored, I think, 30 points in one of the Olympic games this last summer in Paris. They've got a young man named Will Riley who's projected to be a high NBA pick at some point. I think Brad, you know, deal, and seeing him in action as he typically is, you got to play defense for Brad Underwood if you're going to play, first of all. And, you know, he's not afraid to preach that early, even to these guys who are really talented. But, you know, Ty Rogers is back, and they've got so many guys. The big key is going to be how are those going to break down? You know, who's your point guard, and what kind of style of player are they going to have? And this team, I think for a lot of people not to have them ranked, that's okay. I mean, I don't think Brad's going to worry about that. There's just so many unknowns from the outside. But I think inside they know they've got potentially a pretty special team.
Got a couple of good coaches there, Brad Underwood and Brett Bielema, as Illinois beats Michigan 21-7. Congrats on the win, Brian Barnhart. Safe travels to Eugene as you take on the Ducks.
Yep, we're flying out there this week a day early, so we'll get ready for Autzen Stadium. That should be fun.
Yeah, it will be. Thanks, as always, for joining us on KMOX.
You're welcome, Tom. Keep up the good work. Thank you.
You too. Brian Barnhart, voice of the Illini. Quick break, come back, and Josh Schertz is with us from St. Louis University right after this.
And he hits a slammer!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Sports on a Sunday morning continues. Man, everything is going right now. It's an incredible time of year, and college basketball is underway. Joining us, the head coach of the Billikens, Josh Schertz. Good morning, coach.
Morning, Tom. How you doing?
Doing great. A win for you on Friday against Rockhurst, your exhibition. I know that you look at more than just the result. This is something that you will finally have some film to be able to break down against another opponent. How did things look for you? Let's start with that, as you had five Billikens scoring in double figures.
Yeah, I think, it was really almost, you know, two separate games. I think you had the first 17 minutes, we were down. We're down 33-26 with 3 minutes to play, and I think that was certainly our floor. As a team, I thought we were really, really poor. We obviously didn't shoot the ball particularly well, but we were just out physicaled, outworked in every aspect. You know, credit to Rockhurst, because I did think they came in, really punched us in the mouth and dominated the game. Loose balls. We struggled to get stops. So they kind of pushed us around the basket. We struggled to convert under the basket. Beat us in every which way. And then I thought the middle, 16, 17 minutes, we outscored them by 30. And so we went from, down 7 up 23. And then from the last there, 6-7 minutes, I kind of sub liberally and let everybody play, and it kind of finished where it finished. But I think we saw some good things in that middle 16 minutes. I thought we saw our floor that first 17 minutes, but had a lot of guys do some encouraging things. But certainly we have to the mentality that we came out with wasn't acceptable. And I thought the middle piece right there was much more of our identity of who we want to be.
And as part of that messaging at halftime, do you sit down and refocus as a group? Do you attribute that to the change in the start of the second half?
Well, I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I think have, I mean, the adjustment we made was in the mentality piece, right? Like that was, there wasn't a X and O adjustment. You can't X and O your way, out of playing soft, not having appropriate physicality, maybe not being locked in. I thought, our offense is based on, a rhythm. And being in rhythm, being in sync, and to be in rhythm and be in sync, you got to be on time. We weren't on time at all. Offensively, we turned it over 11 times. Most of those in that first half, most of those in that first 17 minutes, I thought, and a lot of times in that first half, our offense was their best offense because they were just getting runouts in transition. They had 33 points at halftime, and I think 11 or 13 of those were off our turnovers. So, the biggest thing was the mentality. But I think you have to, it's more a question of why do we come out with that mentality more than, we stepped on the gas, but you can't do that. Like, you can't go into a game and take the temperature and figure out how hard you have to compete to win. It's going to take 70% of my effort or 73 or 80. Like, good players, good teams, there's a level of, hey, we're coming out, we're playing as hard as we can from tip to jump. And I don't think it wasn't that we weren't playing hard, so maybe it's not framed that way, but I didn't think we played with a level of physicality, the level of force that needed to be. And that's really what changed from that halftime. The second half was the level of force, the level of physicality that we brought to the table there in the second half, and that's why we were able to flip the game.
The Billikens shot 64% from the floor in the second half, outscored Rockhurst 56-32 in the second half, won the game 86-65. Josh Schertz is with us. Another game coming up on Friday against Maryville. Let's talk about some individual performances, if you would. I know that you looked inside first, is the first thing you were just talking about. How did Kalu Anya play? I know that you want to see a lot out of him. He ends up with 12 points and 11 rebounds.
Yeah, I think Kalu did some good things. Second half, he was terrific. We took him out there, but he could have had a really monster second half the way he played, the force and physicality in half two. I think you know, Kalu's a guy, and we have a few guys on our team like this that, you know, and I think our whole team is this way. We have two or three guys that really drive it. You know, Kalu's growth is going to be about raising his floor. I think so many times when people think about improvement, driving improvement, they think about making their best better. And, you know, I guess the best way to equate it is like a golfer, you know, like people don't understand. So, like, if you're a good, you know, you golf a couple times a week and, you know, your best is you can, you know, you can break par. You can shoot, you know, 70 or 69, 68. But your floor is you shoot 110 when you're at your worst. You're not a great golfer. It's the same thing with basketball players. It's about raising your floor individually, collectively. Kalu's ceiling is really high. We've got to raise his floor. And he's not the only guy. We've got to do that as a team. Like that first 17 minutes of the game, you know, that was our floor. That's got to get much higher to become a good team. He played second half like he's capable of, and I thought he did some really good things on the glass. I thought he touched paint. He let us some paint touches, you know, had a double-double. But I thought his defense second half was really good. We were able to switch him. He guarded all five players in the other team. And so, you know, with Kalu, I think it's simply that. And like I said, there's two or three other guys in that same boat where they're too good of players to have their floor there. We're too good a team to have our floor there. Our floor has got to move significantly in terms of improvement. That's got to be an individual thing and of course, a collective thing.
You've seen a lot of Isaiah Swope. What did he look like, and how did he get into the swing of things on Friday?
Yeah, first half, he would tell you. I mean, same thing, you know. He was at his floor in the first half, you know, was not, you know, where he needed to be. He didn't look like the Isaiah Swope we know. When Isaiah Ceiling is one of the best players in college basketball, one of the most dynamic scorers in college basketball. His floor was, you know, what he was in the first half, and I think he reset, refocused at halftime, and, you know, he came out, and he scores the first 8 points of the second half, but I thought his force on the offensive end of the second half, getting in the paint, you know, shooting the ball with confidence, you know, trying to play the way he needs to play to be successful. I thought he simplified the game, you know, for himself at halftime. I thought his defense was good the whole night. You know, they had a kid that's a pretty good shooter, came in and made 80-some threes. Isaiah did a really nice job in his matchup defensively. Even in the first half, he did a nice job defensively in his matchup. But I thought in the second half was much more of, you know, who he needs to be, where he's playing, you know, really, really in attack mode every time he touches, but attack mode to make the right play. And he's got a, you know, another guy that you know, he's got to simplify his game, and he's got to raise his floor. Isaiah, when he's at his best is as good as any guard, really, in college basketball. But that floor's got to jump, just like Kalu's. For us to be good, we can't have a floor like that like we did in the first half. And those two guys, I thought, were really a big part of why we struggled in the first half. And I would say they were the two biggest reasons why we were so much better in the second half, because their impact on our team is so dramatic when you talk about Isaiah and Kalu.
And Gibson Jimerson, who everybody in America knows that he can shoot the three. So when you watched him last year, people are grabbing him and staying with him and making it difficult for him to get the ball or at least get off a clean shot. How has he looked both in practice and Friday from that perspective, moving without the ball, trying to get open looks?
Yeah, Gibbs been terrific. I mean, he's been he's a guy that's been, you know, our most dependable player. If you look at the summer to the fall, you know, obviously, you know, he and Larry didn't shoot it great. When you look at, you know, the threes, I think there were 2 for 15 combined. But, you know, shooting is its own thing. That's kind of a fickle deal. There's going to be nights where it goes in and nights where it doesn't. The key is take good ones. Gibson's moves well without the ball, and I thought he did a nice job on the offensive end of, you know, a night where he made 1 3, he still found his way to 14 points, right? You know, he was able to get downhill. He drove some closeouts. I thought he did a nice job of trying to, you know, he got a nice great cuddle on the baseline and got a layup. He found ways to score without the three ball going in. I lose no sleep over Gibson Jimerson shooting the basketball. So I know that's going to be, you know, something we're going to be able to count on, the, you know, his career with us. He's been the most dependable guy, like I said, on our team, you know, this summer, this fall. I think Gibbs going to have a great year. He's got to continue to clean up things defensively. He knows that. And we do as a group as well. But I love his attitude, his focus level. He's all about the right things. And you know, like I thought, you know, with his shooting, his floor on, on Friday night was still pretty high.
And your leading scorer after Jemerson and Swope had 14 apiece was Amari McCautry. I'm interested in him. Now, he's an explosive player. He's 6'5", Coach. That is quite a body to grow into. He's young.
Yeah, no, he really is. He's actually grown an inch since he's been here. He's 6'6" now with a 7-foot wingspan. Amari does not look like a freshman physically, for sure. He's the most physical driver in our program. He's probably the best on our team at touching paint and getting downhill and putting pressure on the rim. He's a guy that as he figures out how to kind of eliminate losing. He does a lot of good things and he does a lot of things that have scratched your head. I will say this about him. His trajectory has been really good. When you look at his growth from June 3rd to October 20th, it's been really, really significant. I think as his trajectory continues, he's a guy that's as talented as anybody in our basketball program. When you look at his ability to handle the ball, his ability to touch paint, his ability defensively, he comes over on a rotation as a point, he's kind of a point guard, combo guard, comes over and blocks a center. On a baseline drive, dunk attempt. He does some things that you don't see many guys who are combo guards being able to do, and that goes back to, his size and versatility. He's got good feet. We needed him in that game because the way they played us, they were out really trying to deny and pressure and be physical and blow stuff up, and his ability to put his shoulders down and get his shoulders by people and then force rotation, get the ball to the rim was obviously a big part of why we were able to kind of crack that open. He got all 16 of his points in the second half. So he's a guy that we got to continue to develop because he's got a chance to really if he can get to where he's able to play consistent minutes and he does enough good stuff, I think that changes our ceiling as a team because of how talented he is individually.
He certainly seems like your kind of player. Finally, Friday night, you'll be taking on Maryville, another chance for fans to see you in person before the real games begin, an exhibition. You'll have the lights on and the band in and the place going at Chaffetz Arena on a Friday night. Preston Ingram is the head coach at Maryville. He used to be down the street at Missouri Baptist. So a chance for one of the local schools to come in and play it.
Yeah, no, it's a good opportunity for us. We need it. We got a young group that's learning how to, kind of come together. Young group in terms of, playing together, and so these experiences are invaluable for us. The opportunity to compete with the lights on, have fans there to play through some stuff. I think that, it's obviously a huge part. We've got a lot of growth. We've got to undertake here in the next 15 days before we tip it off against Santa Clara. The majority of that growth has to occur on the court, on the practice court where nobody's watching, but the opportunity to play outside competition, to see yourself against somebody else, to have what happened this past Friday where, the competition shows you, hey, this is where you're deficient. This is some things you're doing well. Here's where you got to grow. Here are some issues that were presented, and you need the competition to show that. We know it's a great opportunity to go out compete against a good team in Maryville. Preston's done a really nice job. One of their assistants is my former assistant at Lincoln Memorial, Lance Ignatz. So I know, obviously known Lance forever. It'll be fun to get out there, compete against those guys. And like you said, have a local school in here. And hopefully Chaffetz, I thought there was a good atmosphere, good energy on this past Friday against Rockhurst. Hopefully it's as good or better here coming up against Maryville, and then we tee it off for real.
It's a 7:00 tip on Friday night at Chaffetz Arena as the Billikens take on Maryville. Josh Schertz, always great talking ball with you. Appreciate it. Have a great Sunday.
Hey, appreciate you, Tom. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Always great to talk to Josh Schertz. Just recorded that with him before the show. They are practicing right now. Schertz tells me that Robbie Avila will get some work today. And quite possibly tomorrow, they're going to continue to watch that sprained ankle. And if he is good to go this week, if he doesn't have any setbacks, he could see some minutes on Friday against Maryville, maybe 12 to 18 minutes of work on Friday. So we'll keep an eye on that. Obviously, they are a much better team with Robbie Avila on the floor running that offense. Let's take a break. The Blues get a win last night at Enterprise Center against the Carolina Hurricanes. We'll hear all about it. Drew Bannister and players next on KMOX.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
Back on the show as the Blues also were victorious yesterday. They won 4-3 over Carolina. The Blues are 4-2 on the season. They fell behind in this game, 1-0 after the end of the first period, but they erupt for three goals in the second period. They get one from Matthew Joseph. They get one from Jake Neighbors, each of them with their second of the season. And the first of the season from Dylan Holloway. We'll hear from him in just a moment. Here's Coach Drew Bannister on that second period.
Yeah, I thought for me, a lot of it started at the offensive blue line. I think we had 12 turnovers at the offensive blue line. And when you're doing that, you start to chase the game. Like, we didn't play to the goal line. We weren't able to get to a forecheck. And again, against a team like that, they transition the puck so well, skilled forwards, that just plays into their game.
Seemed like the Shen line got you back with the forecheck.
Yep, and I thought as a whole, our group in the second period was committed to playing to the goal line, and we were allowed to get our forwards in the forecheck, get our D more active to keep pucks live on the walls, then the offensive opportunities started to come for us.
If Bolduc's not contributing offensively, do some subtle little plays like the one he made on the Neighbor's goal, or just get a stick in there to be able to get an intercept, are those the things you're looking for from him?
Yeah, and I thought, even going back to last game, I thought Boldy had an outstanding game. I thought probably his third period was one of the best periods I've seen him play as a Blue. And I thought he continued making an effort to finish his checks. His stick has been much, much better, and it's starting to break up plays and create offense going the other way.
Zach Bolduc and the Blues with a win 4-3 over Carolina. Drew Bannister talking about Bolduc there. He's an exciting young player. He only had 8 minutes, 52 seconds of ice time yesterday, but he contributed an assist on that goal from Neighbors, the second of the game. The third goal of the game was scored by...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dylan Holloway to cap the third period scoring.
I felt that was the only thing I could do. I was in tight, so I figured why not try it. But, I've had some chances the last couple games, and it was definitely nice to see him go on.
Were you having to kind of track it the whole way, just maybe not sure that it was going to drop in, just stay with it, I guess?
Yeah, I just had to make sure. I just wanted that one bad. So, I'm just happy to see it go in.
What do you feel like wasn't going right in the first period, and what needed to change moving forward after that?
Yeah, I think it's pretty cliche to say we got to get pucks in deep, but I think we were honestly just turning pucks over too much in the neutral zone and trying to be a bit too cute. So once we kind of got to our game and, got pucks deep and then hammered their D, I think it slowed the game down a bit. And eventually led to some more ozone time and more offensive success.
Holloway's kind of a fun player. He's got some speed. He can be a bit of a pest, some feistiness as well, and tough to play against. And the Blues get the win by a final of 4-3. You know who else had a nice game? Joel Hofer. Hofer, back-to-back games. He shuts out the Islanders on Thursday. And then yesterday, I know he gave up three, but he had 37 saves yesterday, did Hofer. So that gives Bennington a bit of a rest as the Blues get the win 4-3 over Carolina. Don't look now, but the Blues are 4-2 on the season. They have 8 points, 2 off the lead in the Central. Dallas is the leader. They're 5-1 with 10 points. Utah off to a nice start, 4-1-1 for 9 points. Winnipeg, Minnesota, and the Blues all tied at 8 points apiece. Chicago has 5. Colorado's 1-4. 2 points. They made all those moves in the offseason. Nashville's 0-5. Not a point to be had for the Nashville Predators. We'll come back with a big 11 o'clock hour on KMOX after this.
Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
And a key block by the left guard, Tom Ackerman. And right here, let's go downstairs to Bonas.
Marv, if you remember that big run Robert Holcomb had on the first drive, one of the guys responsible on help busting him loose was Tom Ackerman.
Tom Ackerman up front, and this is a unit that has played very well. A good night for Eddie George. 21 carries, 74 yards. The left guard, Tom Ackerman, with the block that set him free. It's a first down.
Yes, indeed. That's what we do around here. We pave the way for first downs. Tom Ackerman, the great offensive lineman, played for the Saints and the Tennessee Titans right there. And I'm Tom Ackerman, the radio host, and I have NFL picks. You know, for a guy who's just a casual NFL watcher, I was pretty good last week against the spread, Drew Young. 10-2-1 against the spread. Even for me, that's insanely good. I don't know what to tell you, except I'm just trying to help you have a good Sunday. Right now, this one doesn't count. You can't bet on this unless you're trying to do some in-game stuff. Jacksonville leading New England 25-16, 3:02 to go in the game. That game is happening right now in London at Wembley Stadium. Once upon a time, I saw the Rams play there. Took on the Patriots. They got shellacked, actually, by Tom Brady and the Patriots. But it was a nice trip nonetheless. All right, here are the games. Again, I was 10-2-1 last week. Can I repeat that incredible success? I don't know. We shall see. Seattle at Atlanta. That spread is 3 points. The Falcons are a 3-point favorite at home against the Seahawks. I like them. I like them -3 at home against the Seahawks. I'm going to take Atlanta -3. Tennessee at Buffalo. Oh, the Bills. I love the Bills at home. 9 points, a lot of points. Bills -9. Take them, Bills -9. Browns +5.5 at home against the Bengals. You know how much I love the Bengals, and you know how desperate I think the Bengals are. And this is a tough one because the Browns have Nick Chubb coming back, and the place is going to be excited to see him. Everyone's going to be hungover after losing yesterday to the Yankees in the ALCS. This is tough. I'm going to go Bengals -5.5 on the road. To cover that, they've been 3-0 against the spread on the road. I'm going to stay with it. Green Bay -3 at home against the Texans. The Texans are too good right now. They are going to cover this. They might win this outright. Give me Houston +3 at Lambeau Field today. Under the noon game, Miami at Indianapolis. I took the Colts last week and I was successful. They are -3 at home against the Dolphins. I'm going to keep it going. They're 3-0 against the spread at home this year. I like the Colts -3. The game of the day is Detroit at Minnesota. The Vikings are on fire. They're 5-0 this season. Detroit might be the best team in the NFC, however. And they are going to hand the Vikings their first loss of the season today. Detroit +2 at Minnesota. Mark it down. Philadelphia at the Giants. Giants +3. The Eagles have been awful, and I mean awful recently. That was a lackluster game, to say the least, against the Browns, but they won it. And I think they're going to bounce back and beat up the Giants today. I like the Eagles -3 on the road. Okay, the 3 o'clock games, Vegas at the Rams. Rams are 7.5-point favorite at home against the Raiders, who will pack the place. It's going to be Raider Nation today. I like the Raiders +7.5 at SoFi. Carolina at Washington. If you have an NFL lock, if you're still alive in the lock pool, this is a lock. The Commanders are going to win the game straight up. Will they cover 10? Whew, man. Give me Carolina +10. That's a lot of points in an NFL game. Kansas City at San Francisco. The Niners are a 2-point favorite against the undefeated Chiefs. That is just lighting the fire for Patrick Mahomes and crew. Give me the Chiefs +2. Sunday night game, Jets at Pittsburgh. I'm going to go Steelers +2 at home. Even though the Jets added Devontae Adams, Monday night football, I'll take the Buccaneers. I like the dramatic pause in the music. Buccaneers +3.5 at home against the best team in the AFC, maybe the Ravens. But I like the Buccaneers on a Monday night at home +3.5. The other Monday night game, Chargers at Arizona, with the Cardinals, a 2-point dog at home. Give me them too. Cardinals plus 2 at home against the Chargers. Joining us is a great client, great friend in studio, and that is the president of McKelvey Homes, Jim Brennan. How are you, Jim?
I'm doing great, Tom. Thanks.
We have to get his mic on, but how are you? Things are going well for you?
They're going great. Can you hear me now?
I hear you great. And
go Hoosiers.
Oh, my gosh.
He's sitting here
floating
with his IU hat on.
I know. Well, those of you watching us on the stream, you can see that I've been sporting the IU lid today. I'm also sporting a Cardinals MOVA globe. This is a pretty cool item. Now, the sunlight makes this move. How does that work? I don't know.
I was not much in science, Tom, but I know it moves around.
It is a pretty amazing item that's going to be part of your auction, the Dance for Gervais live auction and event at the Third Degree Glass Factory this Friday night. I'll be back as your MC, and I'm excited.
Tom, I can't thank you enough. This is our sixth annual Dance for Gervais. You've been there from day one. And this all started when my sister Pat Odlog, her son Andrew, had a little girl named Anna Grace, who's now 7 years old. She was diagnosed with a rare form of epilepsy. One in every 16,000 people with epilepsy have this rare disorder. And so my brother-in-law Ted, who's now the president of the Dravet Syndrome Foundation, said, rather than just be sad about something, let's do something about it. And so the entire Brennan family has got together. My youngest sister, Kathy, Brennan McGuire, said, why don't we have a dance? And that started 6 years ago. In that time, we've raised over $2 million. And we are the largest fundraiser in the nation for the Gervais Syndrome Foundation. It's very rewarding. Many in our home building industry, our McKelvey Homes, we've really, and all the Brennans have really been passionate about this cause to help raise funds for research to help find a cure.
Well, you're a great partner at KMOX, but you're also a great partner for the St. Louis community. So I give you incredible accolades here for growing this, because I watched you grow this. You grew this from already a good event, but into a monster. Now, do you have any seats available for this on Friday?
You might have to go to StubHub to get them.
They're gone, huh?
Yeah. But for the right price, they can have my seat, Tom. We've got over 400 people. I've been
You'll
working on
You'll make a seat if somebody gives you a donation.
We'll make it available. You might even be able to sit at the Tom Ackerman, Chris Bonfanti table right up front.
Yeah, we'll make room for you.
But, you know, we're still working hard. The money, the sponsorships is what counts. And we have a great silent auction. You could find all this out on danceforgervais.org. We've got some great oral auction prizes. And if you haven't seen Tom Ackerman in action, the way he gets, in fact, he even got his wife Angie to bid on this oil painting last year.
Which is in the KMOX sports office.
It's beautiful. And so I think you got room on that wall for another one.
So we dropped some money on that. We're driving home with it in the back seat. And we were like, now what are we going to do with this incredible painting of Busch Stadium? And we came up with the idea, let's put this in the KMOX sports office for everyone to enjoy. And it is an incredible piece. You see it all the time on the videos that we shoot in the KMOX sports office. So that was a silent auction. That was a live auction.
And there's no truth to the rumor that I was bidding her up.
So you have great golf events on this live auction. You have a Cardinals baseball suite. You have a Pacers suite, a deluxe, actually courtside seats for the Pacers Pistons game. You have a private dinner for 10. Donated by Cravings. You have Belle Reve. You have a suite at the Blues game. I mean, that is a pretty awesome
event. And our son Patrick Brennan just had on Friday a drive for Gervais out at St. Albans. And one of his good friends, John Beck from Beck and Beck, donated Boone Valley an overnight stay in those luxurious cabins out in Augusta where I haven't seen it, but I know I'm going to try to bid on it. They've got state-of-the-art simulators there for 8 dinner, drinks, breakfast, golf in the afternoon the first day, golf in the morning the second day. I mean, one of the best courses in the entire state, and we really thank John. And it's just an indication of how all the Brennans have really tried to raise funds to help find a cure.
I know that coming up next, we're going to hear from Lutz Fahnensteel, the sporting director of City, and Drew will let me know when he calls in. But I want to also mention that your business, McKelvey Homes, donated every single time you sold a home to the Dravet Syndrome Foundation, 1898 for every home. That's the year you were founded.
We have, and thanks to you, Tom, we're having another record year. Every quarter, we started this last year, was our 125th anniversary, and we said, why don't we give $1,898 in honor of a charity? And this third quarter, we did it for our Dance for Dravet again. I saw you, I don't know where I saw you a couple weeks ago, and you said, why don't you run it until the event itself? So yeah, we're extending it.
We're at Jack Donovan's retirement party, I'm pretty sure.
That's right, Jack Donovan. And I tell you, I've never seen a guy throw a fastball on opening pitch with a coat and tie on, but Jack donated the Pacer tickets, the Blues suite, just a very generous person. But we've already sold 28 homes. The best way to help Dravet is buy a McKelvey home today. That 28 homes that was sold is just a little over $53,000 that we'll be giving that evening. So with that, that'll put us a little over $400,000 so far this year. We're trying to get to $600,000. I know with you as an MC, we'll get there.
We will get there. We're going to start it at 6 o'clock with a cocktail hour, 8 o'clock program, 9 o'clock live music, Third Degree Glass Factory. Again, tickets are sold out for this, but
you can still donate, and you can go to danceforgervais.org, and you can bid on these silent auction items. I'm sure my granddaughter, Olivia Rose Brennan, has got her eye on that Taylor Swift guitar.
That sounds good to me. I appreciate this very much. Thank you for coming in to tell us more about this. And then afterwards, you can watch me as I scramble to Bloomington, Indiana to try to make College Game Day.
We'll make sure we get you there. If I got to drive you there, you'll get there.
I appreciate you. Tom, maybe I'll ask you for maybe a little parking spot on the side.
Then. You'll have VIP parking right next to the King, Jeff Drew.
You are the man. Thank you, Jim Brennan, for being with us. Always appreciate you.
And Tom, thanks for everything you do, not only for the Dance for Dravet, but for all these other causes in St. Louis. You know, St. Louis is so generous. And there's nothing like the feeling of helping someone when you give. You get more in return. So I can't thank you enough for everything you do.
Jim, thank you. And instead of taking a break, and I know we have one, I want to go right to the phones and spend a few moments with Sporting Director for St. Louis City SC, Lutz Vandensteel, who is hanging on the line here for the last couple minutes. Lutz, thank you for that. And thank you for a great season. I know we're going to talk about 25, but let me reverse and just say thank you for 24. I know you didn't end up where you wanted to end up, but you did have some moments of promise there. And I think the biggest thing, Lutz, when you look at the number of draws that you had, that pretty much tells the story, doesn't it, about your 2024 season?
Yeah, thanks for being that complimentary. But again, you know, after yesterday's game, I think that game still stuck a bit in my head. So if you want to first talk about the positives, we can do that. But I still need to give you a few thoughts about the game yesterday. So, yeah, Tom, I think the numbers of draws combined with the numbers of injuries and then again combined with a really good transfer window, I think it put the season a bit in perspective. You know, if you would have been in the Eastern Conference, we still could have made the playoffs yesterday because it was really tight. However, we didn't. But there's definitely, looking at the last 13, 14 games since we had the coaching change, since we did bring the new players in, I think you can see an improvement, minus the game yesterday, but you did definitely see an improvement. And it's now up for us to work hard in the off-season to get the guys ready to do a few more bits and pieces on the transfer market. I think yesterday showed that I'm not there where I want to be right now, and there still needs to be a little adjustments here and there. But yes, I think we definitely saw a better end and than a start. And with the numbers of draws and the numbers of tight games, could have gone a bit of a different way. But sometimes you overperform, like in 2023, and then you underperform, like in 2024. We just have to find the right balance.
And last night, you did not perform at the level that you want. Your performance was certainly not what you were looking for in 2025. What happened? Why do you think that you weren't able to do what you wanted to do in terms of last night?
Yeah, I start with a very simple sentence. You know, everybody who listens out there and actually made that journey to fans to Minnesota so far up north by driving or flying, I'm really sorry the way we played. It was not good enough. I felt, especially the first half, I did feel embarrassed for the people who watch it on TV and also for the fans who traveled. Yeah, but what was the problem? I think, getting into the last game of the season after coming from a good game against Houston and knowing you're already eliminated, I think it comes sometimes down to the mentality, and it comes down to that last effort, which I didn't see in the first half. We had a good talk at halftime, and I think the second half looked in the start much better, but we got punished against, and that's something I think important to say, against one of the absolute top teams at the moment in the league. Minnesota have the momentum. They're so lightning fast up there with Longomane and also with Yeboah that they are very difficult to play. But the way we presented ourselves, the way we defended, the body language, I was very disappointed, as you might can pick up. And that's something which we also need to pick up from this season, that like a performance like yesterday, regardless if a home or away, is unacceptable. And this is where we need to get better, again, to get that balancing, to be a team which can perform week in, week out, and not having these terrible off moments like yesterday.
I'm certain that John Hackworth will take a critical look at himself, as will you, at your coach. Could you give me an idea of what this will be like here as you make the decision on naming a permanent head coach moving forward? What does that timeline look like?
You know, I have to say that I have to put my stand in front of John and completely shield him for that game yesterday, because we had a good week in training and he tried to really motivate the players and work on the detail. I said it after the game. In the changing room, that I felt the players let John Hackworth down yesterday. I think the players realized that, and the players confirmed that when we had our off-the-match talk as well. So I really would take John now out of the equation for that loss yesterday. You know, that's not something I do and I want to blame on the coaching staff. That's simply the one the players have to take right in the nose, because that performance was below par and not good enough. You know, self-reflection is a very important part. Realizing when you're not performing up to that what we want to be, and especially not showing the effort and the mentality, I think that's something we need to address, and we did, and I did address yesterday very clearly. But of course, let's be honest, there is always that last impression you leave in the season, and we had that. Yeah, a terrible last impression last year against Kansas, where we carried that kind of bad and sour and bitter feeling over. I don't want that to happen next year, that we remember a game in Minnesota which was not good enough. So we should focus on the positives which you mentioned when we started to talk. And in my opinion, there's nothing, it will not have an influence for Hack, if he gets a job or he doesn't. I do not want to really mark it on this game yesterday. As I said, the players let him down, the players let me down, the players let the fans down, the players let the ownership down, and the players were very clearly told that it won't happen again the same way it happened yesterday.
Lutz, I know that that has been addressed to the team. What about, this is the last thing for you, what about your roster? Do you individually meet with each player? How does that work now, moving forward?
So, you know, that's actually a good question, because it's a rule in the MLS that you have in the exit interviews, which means every single player will spend between 15 to 30 minutes, and it can be also more if there's more to talk, and with others it's maybe a little bit less in the coming days, to discuss the season, to discuss the performance, to discuss the plan forward, or whatever you want to talk about. You also can talk theoretically about the weather, but I think we have more important things to talk about. And there is also an exit medical. So before the players will leave, there will be some good talks, some hard talks. I don't really feel right now it's a moment to go on holiday after that game yesterday. So there's still will be a few discussions in the next few days, how we're going to move forward. But yeah, definitely with every single player individually and also with groups, we will speak, we will discuss, and it will have also some influence, of course, on the roster building. Do we need a lot of changes? You know, bringing in 9 players, 6 external and 3 from 3-2 in July. You know, we can't change every year the whole team. So we need to have a bit of a trust in the boys right now. We need to believe in that what we have. But if there are still things we can improve and things we have to change and players we have to add on certain positions, 100% that will happen. But don't expect such a busy transfer window like we had this summer.
Understood. Certainly trying to find the right mix right now for St. Louis City SC. Lutz Pfannensteel, sporting director, always kind to join us on KMOX. Thank you very much for the time, Lutz. Well, have a great Sunday.
I have one more for you. You know, like, no, we played yesterday with the first team, game over, but today we have a playoff game against LAFC, second team with City 2.
Yes, you do.
Which is a great game for us. Wonderful weather, 2 o'clock kickoff in City Park. You know, the young guys did extremely well this season, finished second in the conference, finished second overall. I think they have everything to go very, very far. So all the City fans who were disappointed yesterday and have an afternoon not much to do, show up, support the young boys, support the kids because they deserve it. They had a great season and they really have the quality to maybe win some silverware, which we were very far away this year as the first team.
No, it's an excellent, absolute great point, and certainly the future of the organization right there in front of you. City 2 in the playoffs, 2 o'clock at City Park. Lutz, thank you again. Appreciate the time.
Have a nice Sunday.
You too. It's 11:27. In just about 5 minutes or so, we'll connect with Polo Asensio, Cardinals broadcaster. We'll go to Los Angeles.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Los Angeles, where he is watching the Dodgers and the Mets tonight for us in the NLCS. And Bernie Miklas is going to be with us at 11:45. Don't go anywhere. Sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX right after this.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports on a Sunday morning.
Goldschmidt swings and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Gray Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Billikens win! Billikens win!
Once again, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, Tom Ackerman.
What a time to be alive. Sports happening everywhere here in the month of October. And let's go out to Los Angeles, where they are revved up for tonight. I'm assured of that. As the Dodgers host the New York Mets in Game 6 of the NLCS, and watching it is our very own Cardinals broadcaster, Polo Asensio. Good morning, Polo.
Buenos dias, Tom. Buenos dias. Good morning, everybody. And yeah, I mean, this is a feeling, and I don't mean not even on the field. This is something that I don't think you guys or we have never felt in St. Louis. It's going to be about 80 degrees at 5 o'clock when first pitch comes on at this game between the Dodgers and the Mets. So it's like summer in October here for the Dodgers and the Mets. Hey, and for the Mets, there is no tomorrow. There is no tomorrow. Today is tomorrow for them. If they don't win today, their vacation starts tomorrow or perhaps tonight, and the Dodgers go on to face the New York Yankees. Congratulations to Luke Weaver and the New York Yankees because they are going to the World Series.
Yes, absolutely. Let's start with that, if you would. The Yankees toppling the Cleveland Guardians. What a terrific series it was. Whoever plays the Yankees, let's say if the Dodgers play the Yankees, would the Dodgers be favored in that series, do you think, or do you think it's a toss-up? That Yankees team is loaded.
I think the Yankees will be the favorite for a little bit, not a lot, but they will be the favorite against the Dodgers. And against the Mets, I think even a little more. Why? Because the Yankees have better starting pitching. Their bullpen sometimes is a little suspect, but then again, like I just mentioned, Luke Weaver came out of nowhere to close games for the Yankees at the end of the season. And even though he had a few hiccups against the Guardians, he did the job, and yesterday was proof of it. So I feel the Yankees will have the edge against the Dodgers or the Mets. But as we know, you know, baseball is so weird that the baseball is round and it comes in a square box. So we never know what we're going to get.
Oh, you're 100% about that. What has been, and before we get into the Dodgers, your impression of this Mets team? You just talked about them. Anything can happen. They could win this game today. They've got some fight in them, don't they? I mean, they came out roaring in game five after getting trounced for a good portion of that series, Polo.
You know, a lot of teams, and this is not something that we just say, right? I never played professional baseball, but this is not something that we say. A lot of teams could have said, you know what? This is it. This is it. This is it for us. Let them go on and go to the World Series. But the Mets didn't say that. The Mets showed something different on game five against Jack Flaherty, who, in my opinion, Jack was not very mindful because he didn't change his game plan. I don't know if it was him, if it was Will Smith, if it was Mark Pryor. What happened there that the game plan for Jack was the same game plan he used on game one? In game one, he did fantastic here in L.A., but then game five, his slider was not biting. The hitters were a lot more patient against his pitches, and he couldn't fix that. He couldn't figure it out, or they couldn't figure it out, because at the end, it's not just the pitcher, it's also the catcher. His pitches were good. Were about the same as game one. The difference was the Mets. The Mets were ready. The Mets didn't want to go home. The Mets don't want to go home, especially in front of their fans on game five. And game six, to me, is going to be very, very interesting. But this Mets team, with a lot of, oh, my God, right, the OMG with Iglesias singing, and a lot of veteran presence with Lindor. And let's not forget that Pete Alonso could be playing his last. Every game could be the last game of Pete Alonso as a Met. So are you going to tell me that he's going to just sit down and let the Dodgers go on? No. He wants to get there. He wants to get there, especially, like I said, if this is his last season with the Mets, he wants it to be a long off season and perhaps have another have a rematch against the New York Yankees in the World Series.
Every time it seems like I watch a Dodgers game, Tommy Edman's standing on first base. I mean, I know that's not the case, obviously, but he's back and he's out there. He's making things happen. He's getting on base. He's making things difficult. I think that it's a fun team, obviously, and I am happy for Tommy Edman, the former Cardinal, aren't you?
I think we all are. I had a chance to talk to him in L.A. for the first couple of games, and the guy is very, very happy. He's grateful that the Cardinals traded him to a winning team. He didn't want to leave St. Louis, but he understands the business, and he understands that he was going, at least for this season, to a better place, and he's showing it. A lot of things get lost in the shuffle, as you know, Tom, but the job that Tommy Edman is doing, the job that Kike Hernandez is doing, the guys that are not supposed to be the superstars for the Dodgers have lifted this team a couple of times during the season and perhaps even before the postseason. So Tommy Edman is having a great time. Whatever they put him, he does great. And trust me, to nobody's surprise, everybody loves Tommy Edman in L.A. The fans already chanting his name. I already saw a few Edman jerseys in the stands. And like I said, he loves it. He lives nearby Glendale, California. So he's having a good time. And you can see that. You can tell that on the field because he is producing, as we know, the way he can produce. And I think he could be key tonight for the Dodgers. And if not tonight, then tomorrow we'll see what happens.
Tommy Edman hitting .409 in the NLCS to lead the Dodgers right now.
Yeah, somebody was saying, you know, if the series would have ended on game five, he could have been the NLCS, bringing me memories of David Eckstein, you know, the little guy in the middle of the field being the MVP for the Cardinals in the World Series. And why not? I mean, hopefully he has a good game tonight. Him and Tommy and the Dodgers win. And imagine, you know, Tommy Edman, the NLCS MVP for the LA Dodgers.
Meanwhile, Teoscar Hernandez is 0-18 in the NLCS, but like a volcano, you just wonder when he's going to erupt. And Freddie Freeman, it's painful to watch him walk around and run around on that sprained ankle, but you never know when he might erupt. And then there's Shohei Ohtani. It's just an amazing phenomenon to watch him play baseball. I just I can't imagine what it's like to be around him on a daily basis, Polo.
It's crazy. Like, I talk to the media in L.A., and they're pretty tired of it. You know, when the Dodgers visit St. Louis, they go for 3-4 days, and then they go home. So then we say, okay, yeah, everybody's gone now. But here in L.A., everything had to change. The press box changed. The seating in the press box changed. The food, the way they serve the food in the press box changed. Why? Because there's so much media surrounding and following everywhere he goes, and with good reason. He's an animal. He's the unicorn, they call him. And wherever he goes, everybody pays attention. I know this is the season. This is what we're looking at right now. But can you imagine next season when he starts pitching again? It's going to be even crazier. But he is focused. They are focused. Him and Mookie want to take this Dodgers team to the World Series. And let's go back. Imagine Dodgers, Yankees, Yankees, Dodgers, World Series. That is, I think, what everybody wants. Like, everybody who's not a Mets fan wants Dodgers against Yankees. If you're a Mets fan, of course, you want your Mets against the Yankees. But I really, really hope the world gets their wish and we get the Dodgers against the Yankees this World Series. And why not? Otani, Mookie Betts, like you said, Freddie Freeman in one leg. On the other side, Giancarlo Stanton. A veteran, during the season, he didn't do what he was supposed to. But if Otani has been great against the Mets this series, what Giancarlo Stanton did against the Guardians, I don't know if we will ever see that again. I mean, it seemed like you just said, Tommy Edman, every time we turn on the TV, he was on first base or he was doing something incredible for the Dodgers. Well, every time Giancarlo Stanton came to bat, it seemed like every time he did that, he hit a big home run for the Yankees.
I'm certain a Subway Series would be fun, but Mets, as good as they are, Dodgers-Yankees would be unbelievable for the game and to spread the sport to the casual fan for at least a week to get it at the top of the headlines would be unbelievable. Polo Asensio, you're always at the top of our headlines, man. It's great to hear your voice and hear you breaking down some baseball. I can't wait till we get back together again.
Hey, you know, it'll be fun when Cardo Baseball gets back on the air, but for now, let's enjoy it. We have another 10 days or so of baseball, so enjoy it, whatever it is. If it's the Dodgers, if it's the Mets, against the Yankees, whatever it is, enjoy it. And hopefully we have another chance to talk about it. And thanks again, Tom, as always.
Appreciate you. Have a great time. Polo Asensio, Cardinals broadcaster, covering things at Dodger Stadium. When we come back, Bernie Miklas joins us live on KMOX.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is presented by Saliga Heating and Cooling.
Yes, it is, and yes, he is. Bernie Miklas is with us live on KMOX. Good morning, my dear friend. How are you?
I'm doing just great, Tom Ackerman, on this pleasant Sunday morning.
I am floating right now. I was told that College Game Day is coming to Bloomington. It has been announced. I'm heading there on Saturday. I don't know what to do with myself. My team's 7-0. Please help me.
You know, I texted you kind of late last night because I was going through that Indiana game, you know, and because I thought maybe Nebraska would give them a fight, and they didn't. I mean, Indiana's incredible. I mean, there's no way that anybody of sound mind would have put them even in the division of a playoff spot. But they're in the middle of everything. I mean, it's like anything goes. And what this new coach of theirs is phenomenal. I mean, what a job he's doing.
It's incredible. Kurt Cignetti, he's no nonsense, no BS. You know, he comes from the Nick Saban tree. In fact, his father coached Nick Saban at West Virginia, and then he ended up on Saban's staff at Alabama, and he sugarcoats nothing. I love him, obviously, and they're 7-0. Now their quarterback, Curtis Rourke, out for the game with a thumb injury, so they're going to go with Taven Jackson, who played in the second half. And you know what? The party will go on, and the defense and the rest of the team, the offensive line, the receivers, the backs, they'll all have to play, so you never know. This college football season is nuts. I mean, it's awesome.
It really is. And that scene yesterday at Faurot Field, the whole Brady Cook adventure, it's one of the great Mizzou stories ever in terms of like a single game. And I was thinking about that comeback and how improbable it was. And you know me, Mr. Numbers, I'll only give you one. When Mizzou had cut it to 17-6 before Brady Cook came back, Auburn's win probability at that moment, it was 17-6. At that moment, they had a win probability of 94%. And so a guy comes out of the hospital. He comes out of the training room. They're doing everything to get him ready. Nothing's working. I think he probably got some pain reliever. And let's just say it's not the kind you find in one of those little bottles in the drugstore. It was just like, whoa. You know, he was supposed to be out for the rest of the game. What's he doing? And he saved homecoming, and he also, Brady Cook, a proud St. Louisan, he not only saved homecoming, he probably saved their season. By that, I mean, if they lose a game, look, no one's talking about Mizzou even having a chance to get a playoff spot. At least he's keeping that dream alive. So he saved the dream. He saved the season. And, you know, he made Eli Drinkwitz, his own coach, cry in the post game. I'm thinking Hugh Freeze, the Auburn coach, was probably crying more after his team stunningly went down to Brady Cook, who came speeding through that tunnel to save the day. Just awesome stuff. This is why we love sports.
It's incredible stuff. Auburn was desperate, and they get a loss, and then Michigan goes to Champaign. They're obviously desperate. They had to win. Michigan had to win the game, and they get smacked by Illinois. Illinois is legit.
Yeah, and the thing I loved about what Illinois did, well, first of all, there's two things, and there could be 20 things, but first of all, Luke Altmyer is an excellent quarterback, and it's like each week you see him play, and he looks like he's just got more swag, more confidence. He just feels like he can't be beat. He's making plays all over. I mean, they have a heck of a quarterback there. The one thing that concerned me from the Illini standpoint is that Michigan does not have a passing game, but they have one of the most brutally tough running attacks in college football. And I really thought Illinois might have a hard time stopping them on the ground, but they didn't. They did a great job stopping the run. So it was just a great win for Coach Bielema and his team and the program. And it looks like Illini fans are like going gaga over the Illini, as they should. And it makes me happy because I like to see Illinois win as well as Mizzou. You know, I pay attention to Illinois. I have to, or Will Leach would get mad at me. So yeah. Anyway.
No, same. I mean, I feel that way always about Illinois, except when they play Indiana. But I do. I feel the same way. Now, they're going to have to visit Oregon. We get it. I mean, Oregon's great. They're going to be number one when the polls come out here in about an hour. I would anticipate that Georgia is going to jump Penn State and Ohio State, who are both idle, and become number two. Texas exposes itself and is now kind of lingering in there, but they'll be okay. I just don't know. This college football playoff's going to sort things out. It's fascinating to see who the top teams are. I feel like this 12-team playoff's made for like a Penn State, you know, that they will probably make it, even though they won't be considered one of the big giants.
And there's still so many. I haven't gone through the numbers, but there's still a lot of teams that are at least in theory in the hunt for one of those 12 spots. I mean, going into yesterday, I think it might have been Kirk Herbstreit was saying there's like 30 teams going into yesterday that you could speak about as like, hey, you can't rule them out. They still got a shot. It might be small, but they still got a shot. So I think it's been working out great, and I think it's really increased drama. People thought it might detract from the usual drama in terms of conference play and everything else. I don't see it that way. And all I do is watch college football all day on Saturday. So, and I can't get enough of it. It's just great action all day long.
I agree. It's my one full day off, and God bless Angie, who lets me sit there and watch games and just, you know, take it in. And it's a great, great day. And then you just flip the channel. You're like, oh yeah, there's baseball going on. The Yankees. Yeah, the Yankees knock off the Guardians. And tonight you got Dodgers, Mets. It's crazy. I just love this time of year.
You know, I don't want to take anything away from the Yankees and just say, well, what do you expect? Big money. You know, of course they're going to beat Cleveland, because there's times where the Yankees haven't beat smaller payroll teams, a lot of times actually. But then you have to acknowledge the obvious in that series. Soto, Judge, and Stanton had 9 home runs and 19 RBIs, and they scored 14 runs. They drove in 19 of the 25 runs that the Yankees scored in the series. And if you add their 3 salaries together for this year, $103 million, Judge, Stanton, and Soto, $103 million. Cleveland's entire 26-man payroll is $88 million. So, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, sometimes, yeah, It really helps to be able to wealthy and be very, very, very wealthy and pretty much spend whatever you want. Yeah, it does help you at times.
It absolutely does. The Dodgers, you think they get it done?
I think so. I picked the Mets to win, and again, they showed some of that underdog fight after they got in a hole in this series, so I'm not going to rule them out, which is a cop-out answer. But I think the Dodgers will find one way to win one game. I do. But nothing would surprise me because it's postseason baseball and it tends to get bananas. Everyone goes bananas. You never know.
And then once this season is complete, we'll start getting news from the Cardinals. I'm certain it's going to be an interesting offseason. We're going to talk about that and more tomorrow at noon. A live stream that our producer here, Drew Young, will be manning on all of our social media channels, the KMOX YouTube page as well. It'll be Bernie Miklas, Matt Pauly, Kevin Wheeler joining me, a four-man team. We're going to cover it all, Bernie.
I can't wait, and I'm glad you're healthy and feeling better, and so you're back in the game. You're in the starting lineup tomorrow. I'm happy about that.
I'm back. I kept working through bronchitis. I worked a little remotely, a little bit in studio, but I'm back. I'm feeling strong, so I'm good to go, man. I can't wait.
Got the band back together.
Let's go.
Look forward to it.
Appreciate you, man. Bernie Miklas, follow him on YouTube. His YouTube page is incredible, and the videos that he puts out. Take care. I'll talk to you real soon.
All right, Tom. Thanks, buddy.
Bernie Miklas. Man, is it good to have him on our team. Folks, that's our show. Enjoy the Chiefs and the 49ers on KMOX later today at 325.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.